Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. The foreign ministers of the big four Western powers, the United States, Britain, France, and West Germany, meet late today in Washington on the eve of a two-day NATO summit conference. Secretary of State Vance will play host for their dinner at the State Department, and the extent of Soviet and Cuban military involvement in Africa is likely to be a principal item on the agenda. That issue produced a public difference of opinion after Saturday's meeting between President Carter and Soviet Foreign Minister Gromyko. The president expressed concern. Gromyko said Mr. Carter's information was not correct. Yesterday on NBC, National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski urged an international response to Soviet and Cuban military operations in Africa, and he accused the Kremlin of violating the spirit of détente. The African problems, in all their ramifications and complexities, are almost certain to spill over into the NATO summit that opens tomorrow. We'll hear about that from Lee Thornton.
In Washington will be one other head of state, the president of Portugal, 12 heads of government, and the foreign minister of France. Administration officials say there are several goals for the summit: to demonstrate unity of allied purpose and action, to reaffirm the United States' commitment to Europe, to show the U.S. Congress and the American people that the European allies are bearing a fair share of the allied defense burden, and to look ahead to the challenges that face the alliance in the 1980s: defense, détente, economic and social problems, peacemaking outside of Europe, and the spread of Soviet power. The ceremonial opening of the summit will be Tuesday morning when President Carter addresses the delegates, the first of several formal and informal speeches by the president. On both days, Mr. Carter will be holding a number of bilateral meetings. So far, six of them have been scheduled. Lee Thornton, CBS News, the White House.
The United Nations General Assembly today begins the second week of its special session on disarmament, and Richard C. Hotelet reports that Chinese Foreign Minister Huang Hua, who has just arrived from Beijing, will speak to the delegates.
China has made its position emphatically clear. It blames the United States and the Soviet Union, but especially the Soviet Union, for the world arms race. China has long accused both superpowers of competing for world dominance, but its relations with the Soviet Union have gone from bad to worse. The 4,500-mile border between these two great Asian neighbors is a source of constant friction, and China regards the Soviet military posture with intense suspicion. For years, Peking has denounced Soviet disarmament proposals as a fraud to lull well-meaning nations into appeasement. It has dismissed the Soviet-American SALT talks as a fig leaf covering what it calls a frenzied arms buildup. China has refused to join the Geneva disarmament talks or to sign the treaty banning nuclear weapons tests. Peking ridicules the Soviet suggestion of cutting military budgets and holding a world disarmament conference. Instead, it demands that the nuclear powers renounce the first use of nuclear weapons, and it urges small and medium-sized countries to build up their armed forces as defense against aggression. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
Diplomatic sources in Tehran say the United States and Iran are nearing agreement on a nuclear non-proliferation accord. When it's completed, it will clear the way for hefty American nuclear power sales to Iran. The Shah's government hopes to buy as many as 8 nuclear reactors from this country after the agreement is signed. Talks on the subject have gone on for more than 2 years, in part because the United States has insisted on rigid safeguards against possible production of nuclear weapons. China today displays continued irritation over the treatment being accorded ethnic Chinese by the Communist government of Vietnam, thousands of whom have fled in recent weeks. Barry Kalb reports the latest from Hong Kong.
Peking was relatively silent today over the Chinese of Vietnam, but foreign press reports from the Chinese capital say it's understood that a naval convoy is gathering on the Chinese island of Hainan, less than 200 miles from the Vietnamese coast. This fleet is reportedly preparing for a possible mass evacuation of Chinese from Vietnam, although so far there's been no indication that Hanoi would let the fleet into Vietnamese waters. No official word from the Chinese either that the fleet is indeed gathering. Hanoi was anything but silent today, lambasting Peking for what it called false accusations that the Chinese of Vietnam are being persecuted and expelled. Last week, Peking said Hanoi would have to bear responsibility for the consequences of its actions. Today, Hanoi replied that Peking would have to take responsibility for the deteriorating relations between the two countries. The Vietnamese also answered Peking's allegations by gathering some 200 Chinese in Ho Chi Minh City, formerly Saigon. It then quoted them as expressing surprise at Peking's charges and saying they haven't been mistreated at all. Barry Kalb, CBS News, Hong Kong.
Most of the French Foreign Legion paratroops who jumped into Zaire's Shaba province to drive rebel forces from Kolwezi have now been withdrawn. And Robin Wright reports from Kinshasa, the Zairean capital, that their departure has led to fresh concern about the security of the strategic mining center.
Only 150 legionnaires have been left in the embattled city to help Zaire forces maintain control. Some observers feel this may not be enough to hold off another major attack by Katangi's rebels, and the 150 French troops are not expected to stay much longer. The French government announced last week that all legionnaires would be withdrawn to nearby Lubumbashi before returning to Corsica in the near future. Diplomatic sources in Zaire admit that President Mobutu is now looking for other sources of military aid. Three Moroccan military transport planes arrived in Zaire last week, but with a limited number of troops who have not yet been deployed in Kolwezi. There are also rumors circulating in the capital about the possible recruiting of European mercenaries, but so far there is no evidence of their presence. Robin Wright, CBS News, Kinshasa.
The new government of the Comoro Islands in the Indian Ocean announced this morning that former President Ali Soya, who was deposed 2 weeks ago, has been shot dead while trying to escape from house arrest. The government says it happened soon after Soya was told he would be tried by a special court on charges of favoring inhuman and barbarous policies. Soya became president of the Comoros soon after they achieved independence from France in 1975. He survived three previous revolts. Number four proved too much. From today on, if you post a first-class letter with a 13-cent stamp, either you or the addressee will have to cough up another 2 cents. The rate rose to 15 cents at midnight. It's the fifth increase in 10 years. And in Washington, Postmaster General William Bolger was asked when he expects the next one.
As far as I'm concerned, we've gone 2.5 years since the last general increase, and I hope to go at least 2.5 to 3 years before we have to think about another increase. I'm sure that if we can keep inflation under control in this country, if we can get a very satisfactory labor agreement, which we're negotiating now, if we can keep our costs under control, we'll be able to duplicate the record we just set the last 2.5 years.
Bolger's Postal Service hopes to get an additional $1.9 billion a year from the increase that went into effect this morning. A manhunt is underway today in France for the public enemy number one, Jacques Mesrine. He's wanted on murder and other charges and has boasted that no jail can hold him. Early this month, he broke out for the third time, and on Saturday, he showed up in Deauville, where he and an accomplice robbed a gambling casino of $30,000. Then they fled into the forests of Normandy, where they forced their way into an isolated villa and forced a couple to drive them to a town near Paris. There, they vanished. The Dutch Supreme Court today ordered a new trial for Peter Menten, the millionaire art dealer and businessman who was sentenced to 15 years in prison last December for war crimes. He was accused of involvement in a mass execution of Polish Jews during World War II. Menten denied the charges, which he said resulted from a plot by Soviet authorities. This morning, the Supreme Court held that the three judges who tried him in Amsterdam failed to delve deeply enough into the question of whether he had been tried previously for the same alleged offenses. Menten now is 79 years old. Atlantic City, that faded resort city on New Jersey's Atlantic coast, has now gone through its first weekend of legalized casino gambling. Walt Wheeler of Station WCBS has a progress report.
There's no question about the crowds, but the take is still a mystery. Resorts International Corporate Vice President Stephen Norton insisted in mid-afternoon that he still didn't have the opening day count, but suggested strongly that it might well be in the range of $250,000 in winnings for the house. Bigger reports persist, though. One gambling expert, who has a stake in casino gaming here, estimates that the Resorts International drop, or winnings, on the first day's gambling reached $500,000 or even $600,000. And while that might seem high, in view of the fact that the players are basically people with $20 and $50 stakes, not the high rollers, there may be something to it. Another source, one connected with the regulation of gambling here in New Jersey, confirms the other man's assertion that the slots, which have the best odds for the house, produced a bigger handle on opening day here than the slots in any other casino have ever produced. And the credibility of that assertion is reinforced by the fact that this crowd of $20 players scarcely ever gives the slots a rest, lined up, in fact, three and four deep, waiting for a chance to feed the house. Walt Wheeler for CBS News, Atlantic City, New Jersey.
The people of Great Britain now believe that in all probability they'll go to the polls this fall. Bob McNamara reports from London that a national election will probably be held in October. Prime Minister Callaghan will pick the exact date, and McNamara notes that Callaghan will naturally choose a time when he thinks the situation most favors the Labour Party.